Edwin Friedman, who died about a decade ago, spent his life writing about leadership. His book, Generation to Generation, is required reading for ministers of all stripes. It's about church family systems and the ministers' family systems and how they interact to create and constrain leadership. So I noted when A Failure of Nerve was published a few years ago posthumously, he hadn't finished it before he died. So his colleagues and his kids polished it and they put it out. And one possible reaction to this idea that our culture suffers from a leadership deficit because we don't have people with enough nerve to stand up for their values, one possible reaction is to say, that's crazy. What we have is too much nerve, too much ego, too much say whatever you want and the consequences be damned. If leaders were more responsive to the public, if we had more responsive democracy, if more people were empowered to participate, well, then things would be better. We don't, so this argument goes, need leaders who go off to the beat of their own drummer. We've had enough of deciders, of executives who go with their gut and their company and our economy right off the cliff with them. Part of me had this reaction to Friedman's book. This reaction was exacerbated by the first example of a leader with nerve cited in the book, Columbus. No, he's not a leader with nerve, I said to myself. He's a genocidal racist. That's not who I want to emulate. And in the decade since the author died, we've seen a lot of leaders go with their gut, ignore data, follow their vision, and the consequence all too often has been disaster. So maybe nerve isn't such a good idea. And yet, I couldn't quite shake the idea that we do indeed live in a time of leadership deficit. I see groups where no one leads. Everyone's nervous about being criticized, attacked, so they don't step up. I talk to people thinking about being ministers, and they like the idea of living a professionally spiritual life and serving others and preaching and teaching and all that, but they've seen church politics. And they've seen ministers get viciously attacked, and they don't want that. I see political leaders who are happy to offend the other party, no problem with that, but would never dare to defy their supporters, their benefactors, or their own team. The business leader who puts the company's long-term vision ahead of the temporary interests of shareholders is soon removed by the board of directors, shareholders, who want a faster, bigger profit. It's one thing to get your facts straight, to get the right data, but I see organizations and leaders who spend years studying, hiring consultants to write reports, discussing, and then the report goes on the shelf to gather dust, and nothing ever comes of it. And I see leaders, especially in the religious and nonprofit world, who are so naturally empathetic, who care about people, who don't want to offend anyone, that they are paralyzed and unable to act in any way. Or worse, maybe, I see leaders who jump from side to side. Whoever complained last or made the most noise gets the leader's attention, and then they jump back when the other side realizes that the way to get what they want, like a toddler, is to throw the louder fit. Reactivity, excessive caution, excessive empathy, lack of vision, these qualities are real and are making leadership scarce, poor, and more difficult. Somewhere in these different reactions to this book, to this thesis, I believe lies an answer. Clearly, good leadership isn't the foolish, dangerous, irresponsible leadership we've too often seen in the last 10 years or more. Maybe, and I'm not the first one to think this or argue this, just so you know, I don't take credit for this idea. Maybe the irresponsible leadership of the decider variety is a consequence of these weaknesses in leadership culture, a symptom, not the opposite. If you're a leader in a reactive system where everyone is always clamoring for attention, then maybe you become tempted to ignore everyone else and go your own way. If you're a leader in a system that puts too much stock in surveys and consultants, maybe you just say, to hell with it, and ignore all the facts altogether. If you're a leader in a system that says, go slow, make everyone happy, take care of me and me and me and me, then maybe you decide to break the safety glass and put your fingers in the ear and shout at the top of your lungs and run around. Leaders act out too. In systems that punish individuality, leaders disappear or they fail to lead well. Most of our culture isn't like Elmer the Elephant's friends. We don't make a holiday to celebrate someone who is different, who takes us out of ourselves. At least we don't make such holidays while the people are still alive. And when we do make the holiday, see King Dr. Martin Luther, for example, when we do make the holiday, we celebrate the easy, pleasant things like brotherhood and generic equality, and not the hard things like an anti-war, anti-capitalist revolutionary message. I want to talk about that. No, generically speaking, our current culture does not treat leaders well. And so, usually, we get leaders who are weak and timid, or we get leaders who don't care what anyone thinks at all and display an almost pathological egoism. And I don't know if they help. All those leadership books, I've read them so you don't have to. After a while, the names and the methods, they just sort of start to swim in your head, swim in a kind of confusion. You learn all these different methods, but then you have to decide which one to use in any situation. So you wonder, is this when I show stewardship leadership, or is this the time for adaptive leadership? Do I need to get on the balcony, or is it time to get the right people on the bus? Which one am I supposed to do? Some of you know those books. What of 40 possible interventions can I use in this meeting, or should I not intervene at all and just let the process play out? No wonder we throw up our hands. So it will not surprise you that I will argue this morning that the solution to our leadership dilemma is to make a spiritual turn. We're in church, after all. Whether we lead in a religious context or in a secular one, whether it will be in business or teaching, or the courage of a woman from another land to walk out with nothing but her jacket, her hope, her prayers, whatever the arena of our leadership, if we wish to make leadership matter, make leadership healthy and vital, then it will need some spiritual power. Some spiritual grounding. What am I talking about? I'm talking about sing to the power of the faith within. Sing to the power of the hope within. Real leadership requires confidence, not bravado, not narcissism, but confidence, to have a sense of one's own power, the power within you, and to be not afraid of that power. All of the leadership gurus agree with this, that the leader has confidence, uses their power for the sake of their goals. The spiritual turn is to recognize that the power within us, which flows through us, is connected to a holy power that is present in all things. Ralph Waldo Emerson, borrowing from Hinduism, referred to the way that our soul was part of the oversoul, how our spirit was part of a universal spirit. If we think our power belongs to us alone, then we can misuse it or hoard it. But if we remember that our power comes from life itself, from the spirit of life, then this, and that this power is a deep mystery, then this should motivate us to use our power in ways that serve the spirit of life, in ways that are life-giving and not life-destroying. What am I talking about? I'm talking about, be that guide whom love sustains. To guide others, to be guided ourselves by love. The leadership gurus try hard to thread this needle. They say, don't be held hostage by the needy member of our organization. Don't give in to the idea that you, as a leader, are supposed to make everyone happy. Friedman criticizes the focus on empathy. Don't be so concerned, he says, with how everyone feels. Focus on the mission. And yet, the leadership gurus are also clear that you have to stay in touch with your people. Some speak of being a servant leader, that the leader's main task is to serve others so they can succeed. Others talk about the regular practices necessary to make sure that the folks you work with or work for are connecting with you and the organization. If you get too far ahead of the system or too removed from the people, then you'll fail. So where's the balance between those? I think it's to be found in the spiritual turn. Be that guide whom love sustains. Love is stronger than empathy, but it's also clearer. Because I love you, I care not for your surface happiness, but instead for your deeper wholeness. Because I love you does not necessarily mean that I will do what you want. Indeed, sometimes I will deeply disappoint you. I might break your heart, or you mine. But I will not hurt you on purpose, for that is not love. To be a leader sustained by love is to take a wider and longer view, but it is still to care deeply for others. To understand that leadership is a relational activity. To be a leader sustained by love is also to be sustained by one's love for oneself and one's family. And thus, good leaders live in balance. They take breaks. They take care of themselves. The most dangerous leaders I know are the ones who lead because they need admiration and love. They want to please others so they can be loved by them. This is a recipe for disaster. To be a leader sustained by love then means that we are able to lead because we love and are loved, that we do not lead because we need love and praise. What am I talking about? I'm talking about standing on the side of love. The leadership gurus talk about being mission-focused as a leader, and this is vital. To be committed to a vision, hopefully a vision which is shared by others, to be committed to a vision allows the leader to make hard choices and gets others, other leaders and followers, to come along because they share the destination, the hope for where we are headed. A sense of purpose is what motivates leadership, gives the energy to get up and have the nerve to do the work. And being mission-focused is also the tool by which we hold leaders accountable. Not have they made as many people as possible happy, but are they making progress towards the mission, and is it a good mission? Is it worthy? Mission focus, vision, a sense of direction, mean that leadership is for something and not simply an exercise in vanity or power for the sake of power. But missions are not always good missions. A person can have a vision where their side wins and the other side loses, where tradition overpowers freedom, a mission that is self-serving or narrow, even violent and oppressive. So we need the spiritual turn to have a mission that is true and real and worthy, to stand on the side of love, to work for justice for all people, to promote the health of the web of life. We need our spiritual values, our larger ethical humanistic commitments, to interrogate our missions and make sure they're worthy of the gift of life, worthy of the exercise of leadership, the generosity of our time and money. These answers won't always be clear. Blues singing comedians can be on a mission from God, but we Unitarian Universalists are rightly suspicious of anyone else who claims to justify their mission with divine authority. But the need for us to exercise humility doesn't mean that spirituality has no role in these conversations. Exactly the opposite. For true spirituality always makes one a little bit more humble. We need to ask the deep questions about our vision for the world, about what we hope to be leading people toward. Is this really for the best for all? Does this mission promote human flourishing? Does it serve justice and love and build beloved community? Does it let the spirit of freedom blow away the cobwebs of stifling tradition? Is it worthy of our sacred selves? In each of these ways, to sing to the power within, to be the guide sustained by love, to stand on the side of love, in each of these ways, the spiritually grounded leader is made aware that they act not for themselves, but with and because of and for something greater. That is my own experience. When I lead without remembering that my power is borrowed, when I lead looking for love rather than resting in it, when I lead for tactical gain instead of the deeper mission of transforming love for all people, then as a leader, it's easy to succumb to the reactive, unhealthy forces that confront all leaders. Burnout and resentment and anger follow. But when I lead from a spiritual core, with a sense of the power that lives in all, sustained by the wider circle of connection, for the sake of something worthy of my affection, worthy of the gift of life, then I can lead with both nerve and humility all at once. And this leads to encouragement and hope and passion. Leadership isn't easy. It's very difficult. But it is so very necessary. No problem in the world and no problem in your own life will be solved without leadership. If no one leads, then we shall be at the mercy of history. If you don't lead your own life, then others shall lead it for you. Your own life needs leadership, courage to follow your path. This church needs leaders, folks who will, in the context of a larger vision, step forward to move things along. This town needs leaders. This town needs leaders. We need folks who will make a better reality, build for the future, lead with courage instead of standing on the sidelines and complaining. This country needs leaders, folks with our values and hopes who will create new centers of power. Otherwise, we'll be led by those with the most money and the most to gain. This world needs leaders, folks who will remember that we are all connected, that all are worthy, and will give of their gifts to make this world, that world, real and true. Though they met may let arrows fly, though we may be attacked or insulted or pushed off the stage for a time, though storm clouds build on the sea before us, though the whole world might cry out, mend my life. If we are grounded in the power, sustained and guided by love, then we can step up. We can lead. We can build day by day, act by act, life by life, the world we dream of. This nerve, this leadership, this faith, this love, it is the hope of the world. Let's sing together. It's in your teal hymnal, 1014, Standing on the Side of Love. The words are up here for the